Hi everybody, welcome to the Women's Dating and Confidence Podcast. My name is Amber, and today I'm really excited to share with you a podcast episode that I recorded with my friend and former client, Nadine Newkirk, and she also has a really awesome podcast called The Psychology of Dating Podcast, and we worked together for just about 2 years, or a little bit more than 2 years, and then we became friends. So in this episode, we'll talk a little bit about what our work was like together and how she now helps people also in the area of dating. When I was in middle school, there was a Rubik's Cube club. And, you know, Rubik's Cubes are always kind of seen as this amazing demonstration of genius and intelligence if you can solve a Rubik's Cube puzzle. And I remember I was checking out this club, and I just thought, you know, people were just practicing and getting better at resolving these Rubik's Cube problems. And then my friend who was in the class taught me that there are actually a logical sequence of steps that you can follow to slowly solve the cube. So it's like, if you see these four colors in this shape, then do two turns to the left and one turn up. If you see this sequence, then one turn up and two to the left. And like, there are just rules that break down exactly how to do a Rubik's Cube. And it's actually just about learning those sequences and learning to memorize them, basically. So when you just look at the Rubik's Cube, you know what to do. And that kind of blew my mind, because when people are solving the Rubik's Cube really fast and what looks like really intuitively, it's just because they remembered those sequences and they are so familiar with it now and have practiced so much that it just becomes automatic for them to solve the Rubik's Cube. And so then it just becomes about the time, like how quickly can you go through those sequences? How quickly can you recall them? And anyways, this kind of reminds me of how people think about dating and relationships. So when it comes to dating and relationships, we often see it as this really complex and intricate thing that only a few people have randomly sorted out because, I don't know, they're lucky or they're just smarter than us or they have something that we don't have. And there is actually a lot of knowledge available about how we can create a relationship, how we can basically solve this puzzle in our life, how we can create the experience that we want. And it's not something that you just kind of get or don't get. It's actually a series of steps, skills, and pieces that come together where when you practice them more, it just becomes natural, and that's the automatic thing that you create in the end. And that's how I think about my coaching program, From Dating to Exclusive. It's like a club where you learn skills, you learn the tools, and you learn the best practices for creating an exclusive relationship. And you do that with a group of other people who are also learning how to create that. And rather than seeing dating and relationships as this infinitely complex thing that only a few people can figure out if they have a special quality of genius, it breaks it down into steps and skills and tools. And that's what the From Dating to Exclusive curriculum is for. So in the beginning of the program, we go through a workbook that I created where we break down the steps, starting with your mindset and then going into creating dates and then how to nurture those dates and then how to navigate communication and all of those little things that add up in the end to creating an exclusive relationship. And then we have the added element of coaching where we get to work through those concepts and apply them to your actual situation. So you get to have feedback as you're learning these skills and as you're applying these tools. If you've ever tried to solve a Rubik's Cube without that prior knowledge, and you're like, okay, like how do I get the colors on one side and the other side? You know it's impossible if you don't have that background knowledge. If you think, okay, orange is over here, how do I get orange over here? Now yellow is all over the place, right? So we do need that information about how the process actually works and how we create what we want in the end. And what I see a lot of people doing is operating from that mindset that we should just be able to figure this out without any other information. And then they just keep turning that Rubik's Cube, turning it. And, you know, you create a whole variety of results, but it's not the end result that you actually wanted to create. So in the area of dating and relationships, there is so much that we can do and learn to actually direct our efforts towards creating the kind of connection that we want to create. So if you want to join the club, where we learn how to apply these tools, how to create an exclusive relationship, then check out the link in the show notes and learn more about my coaching program, From Dating to Exclusive. All right, now let's dive into the episode.
You are, and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a women's dating and confidence coach. I have a podcast called Women's Dating and Confidence Podcast. I'm super creative with my titles of things. And I have been working with women all around the world, helping them create exclusive and committed relationships in a world that tends to be going more and more towards casual connections. So learning how to be intentional about the kinds of connections that you create. And also we work together, but we'll talk more about that.
Yeah. So maybe I can introduce a little bit about how I know you and how I got, you know, interested in your work specifically. So I actually found Amber through her podcast. By chance, I was myself looking for a bit of advice, wanting to know more about dating, feeling like a little bit stuck. I was asking friends and family, but there's so much conflicting advice out there, and I was getting really into podcasts at that time. I didn't know much about them, and happened to find Amber's 15-minute free call, which was best decision ever. And yeah, I spontaneously decided to book into the calendar. I think it was at, like, you know, the call was going to be in like a day or two, so really quickly. And then ended up from there booking in, you know, starting some coaching sessions with Amber.
Yeah. And it's really cool because we did the dating coaching for a while, but eventually it was like things were going well in that area. And then you were like, I want to do dating coaching. And then it turned into business coaching for a little while till you got some of your first few clients. And then it turned into, well, now this is going well. Can we just be friends now?
Yeah.
So
I remember that transition point. It actually felt like dating because I, as a psychologist, there's like ethics around, you know, not being friends with people personally or things like that. And the dating, the coaching sphere is a little bit different. And yeah, I was very kind of cautious, not wanting to make anyone feel uncomfortable, but also like, oh, I really feel like I want to be friends. Yeah. And so I remember that first message I sent you, it felt like that vulnerability of asking someone on a date.
Yeah. And I remember before you sent that message, that was definitely something I was thinking myself, because I just really enjoyed talking to you and working with you. And, you know, you learn so much about a person by working together for so long. Cause I think we, the whole coaching thing with like business coaching and everything, I think it was close to 2 years.
Yeah.
So you really get to know someone during that time. And, so I always felt you were a wonderful person, like someone I would ordinarily be friends with. Mm-hmm. And I also remember when you sent that text, I was like, I thought about this, but also, for 2 years, I basically never shared anything about myself. Mm-hmm. Or I kind of do as like a part of coaching sometimes, but it's like, you know, within reason or with some like restriction.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was really anxious about, you know, just sharing more personal things. And also just the dynamic was like, so used to just not sharing things.
Yes.
And yeah. And also you were really helpful with that transition because you talked about kind of like what you've experienced as a therapist as well, and how you can really tell the difference between someone who is just looking for
connection because they felt kind of like that connection with their therapist, and they don't really have it in their life. And you're like, you know, I have like 50 friends. Like, definitely not coming from that place. Like, I just like want to talk to you like as a friend. Yeah. So we kind of like clarified. Yeah. So we kind of clarified like where the intention was coming from. And then also just like navigating the transition the first few times that we connected, where it was like mm-hmm. a little weird to be like sharing more about myself, but then eventually it just became normal.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was also a bit of a transition the first, I think it was like the first year, a year and a half, we only spoke on the phone. So didn't actually see each other like face to face. But then there was a different transition of like doing a Zoom call. And I think that maybe helped transition from kind of like business, kind of working together, to then a friendship as well, because then we did the kind of seeing each other. We haven't actually met in person yet.
Yeah. Yes. So officially currently pen pals and phone call people. Yep. But yeah, the first 1.5 years of coaching was no video. I had no idea what you looked like for a year and a half while working together through all kinds of things. And I think I called you on WhatsApp at the time, and your picture there is like really far away in like a yoga pose.
Yeah,
it
gives nothing
away. I literally had no idea what you looked like.
Yeah. Whereas with my due diligence, I'd stalked your website and I knew what you looked like already. So
yeah, that's so funny to think about.
Yeah, I was curious, you know, from you've worked a while now in women's dating, you know, confidence and coaching and helping them with connections. And, you know, I know that you have like a whole bunch of tools and there'd be so many. I was curious if there's any particular tools that really stand out for you that you thought have been like most helpful for people.
Yeah, so definitely one of the biggest tools is called the 5 elements of relationship material. And this was something that I created in response to a client who asked me, how do I actually know if this is the right person for me? And like, I'm dating this person, I like them, but how do you actually know if it has like the substance to go for a really long time, to be something really special? And I thought about it a lot after that call and came up with the 5 elements. So the 5 elements are friendship, connection, physical chemistry, respect, growth mindedness, and similar vision and values. And I always say the 5 elements are like a 5,000 piece puzzle. So it's something you're still putting together even once you're in a relationship. For example, you and I both in our relationships have been going through the 8 dates book from the Gottmans, where a lot of it surrounds those topics where you're still learning about those elements within your relationship. However, the way that I use the 5 elements in dating is to see if that element is present and passing. So it's there and it's going well in that area before you decide to be exclusive with someone. And this is really helpful, first of all, for letting the wrong connections go, but also for having the confidence to take that step to be exclusive with someone without all of the information, without complete certainty, but knowing that at least these 5 things are there as much as you can see them at that point. So that's
a really helpful point, because I've actually shared, this is something I share with all people who I do coaching with, is your 5 elements, because I found it such a helpful filtering system. And I think one of the traps that people fall into is thinking, I need to know 100% if all these elements are here before I go to exclusivity. So I think that's a really helpful point, that, you know, the element is there, but you might not know like 100% certainty. That puzzle's always still evolving.
Yeah. So the main thing that you want to look for in terms of letting a connection go is if one of those elements is failing, right? So if it's just not there, or it's really difficult in this area, that's the time to let go of a connection. And so maybe I can just go through some examples of what that would look like.
That'd be great.
Those, So for example, with the friendship connection, it would be conversation is stiff, humor is completely not aligned. It's difficult to have a flowing conversation with this person. Curiosity is not there. That would be the element is failing. Physical chemistry is, and this really can be, it's not always correlated with the way that a person looks. Sometimes someone can be perfectly attractive, but you just don't like the way they smell. Or like little things can, it's really not always up to us, but basically feeling like your body is moving away from that person instead of towards means that element is failing. With respect, any sense that that person fundamentally doesn't really think about or consider your emotional experience of a connection, that would mean that element is failing. And that can show up in a lot of ways. That can be they're really not making plans. They are not very responsive in communication. They're unkind. They're hot and cold, those kinds of things. Growth, if it were failing, would be they complain and blame a lot rather than taking agency in life. They don't really pursue growth or even just well-being in their life. So it doesn't mean like they have to be extremely ambitious and like go for all of these things and do CrossFit and, you know, but pursuing connections, pursuing health, pursuing like financial wellness, just like normal things are part of a growth mindset. And then lastly, with vision and values, it would be if there's like a significant deal breaker of some kind. So if, you know, you definitely, and that was definitely one that we actually talked about. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. For you, a big deal breaker was kids. You definitely wanted.
I remember you got me to ask on the first date if someone wanted kids. And at first, I was like, "Are you? That is the worst idea. Everyone's got to run for the hills." And now I'm so grateful, like being actually pregnant, about to go on maternity leave. I could say that this was. I'm just so grateful that I really like honored that value that I have and didn't kind of try and push it to the side or pretend it wasn't important. Or
yeah, so can you share a little bit about your experience asking people?
Yeah, I used to have the mindset of this is like a big scary question and I would avoid it and maybe think it's only worthwhile speaking up, you know, like 3 months or 6 months in or something like that, which is kind of problematic because if you're like building a connection with someone and then you're already getting attached and then it's 3-6 months in and then you find out they don't want kids, like that's even harder, one, to kind of leave the connection, or two, then, you know, you kind of might have to have a lot of pain if you do break up or things like that.
Yeah.
And so what I did like is I started to turn into a little bit of like a game, like a bit of an experiment. When you gave me like a new skill to practice, it was like, okay, even if this date doesn't work out well, at least I would have like practiced one thing that you, you know, recommended. And so I started asking people, at first I would over plan my segue, you know, like, do you have nephews, nieces? What about you? Do you want kids? And I felt so awkward to get out. But I have to say, like, practicing it over and over, like, it felt less awkward for me. It felt more like just like another natural question you ask on a date. And I realized people's responses were more to do with them than actually me. Most people just answered the question and they were like, you know, maybe yes or no. I did have one friend of a friend say, oh, I wouldn't ask that because, you know, that would really scare me off. And I knew that person actually had a bit of commitment issues. So I thought, well, that's actually really good. You know, I want to scare those people off.
Yeah. That actually reminds me, that was one thing we talked about beforehand, which was when you ask that question to someone who does want kids, they're happy about it.
Right? They want the same thing. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it's kind of like saying to someone who loves pizza, like, I was thinking of getting pizza later. What do you think? Like, if they like pizza and want pizza, then their inner reaction to that will be positive. But if they hate pizza and they're allergic to gluten and whatever, their inner reaction will be negative. So the only person who will have a negative or like uncomfortable response to that is someone who doesn't want kids, is not ready for kids, or is just generally not on the same page as you.
Yeah. And I remember with my husband now, it was the first in-person date and I was getting dropped home and I was like, all right, I have literally 12 minutes to bring up this question before the date ends. And it was such a nice feeling when he just was like, yes, I want kids. And there wasn't like, you know, it wasn't a scary thing. It was like something that like he wanted just as much as I wanted. And like, it was something we could share, not like be scared of each other.
Somebody wants what you want just as much as you want it.
Very helpful sentence. I had a question about the physical attraction one. This is like one sticking point that, you know, I find with people I work with that sometimes, and I don't know if you've experienced this, when maybe someone's used to kind of going for like a high spark, high chemistry kind of a attraction person, but there's a lot of like ups and downs and they're like, you know, really excited, but then the person's not replying and they get a lot of relief when they finally do. But there seems to be a lot of that physical attraction there. And then someone comes along who's showing up, who's nice, who's consistent, who maybe meets lots of the other elements, but they're like, I don't know if the attraction's there. And kind of how to differentiate, is it because my nervous system isn't used to actually going for someone like this, or is it because there just could be no attraction?
Yes. So I would say both of those, like even the question of is my nervous system just not used to it, implies that you're really not in touch with how you're feeling at all. Because that's actually a very logical question. It sounds very like emotionally attuned because you're using that language of my nervous system and that kind of thing. But that's you intellectualizing your experience around a person. So the truth might be that that person, the high chemistry person, there is attraction, but it doesn't feel good to be in a connection with them because of their hot and cold behavior, that kind of thing. But the truth also at the same time might be that person who's showing up really consistently is you're not attracted to them because you're not. And a lot of people see it as either or. So either I have to connect with the person who is showing up and consistent, and I know it's all the things that are right for me. But the reality is maybe your actual experience with that person when you tune in is that your body saying no, right? So like what we talked about with the failing element where your body is pulling away from this person. And that's a really important signal to listen to. And you should never push yourself to be attracted to someone just because you think you should be attracted to them. And then on the other hand, with the high chemistry person, when people become more aware of their moment-to-moment feeling around that person, they will naturally gravitate towards letting those connections go sooner. Because they notice, okay, yeah, there was that chemistry moment, there was that attraction, and there is that desire, which can be, you know, intoxicating. And then, so I have that for 2 hours, which is all they give me every other week. And then I have 2 weeks of anxiety and confusion and hope that maybe it gets a little bit better because he texted me. And then I respond, and then he doesn't respond for 14 hours. And so I feel crappy those 14 hours. And it starts to outweigh it if you really pay attention to it. But a lot of times, I know it sounds really ridiculous because all we feel is anxiety. We're like, I know I feel anxiety. I know it's not feeling good. But if you really pay attention, it starts to not make sense anymore. And then from that place of being really attuned to trusting yourself. So trusting when you don't feel attracted to someone, trusting when you're attracted to someone, but it doesn't feel good 90% of the time. You become more attuned to a different range of attraction, where you're not just looking at someone, or it's not just about whatever game they're playing. You really tune into what your body feels like around each person that you connect with and meet, including at a party, when you go on a date from online, that kind of thing. And then you might notice that you're attracted to people that maybe before you just wouldn't have paid as much attention to. But a lot of people confuse that for just forcing yourself to be attracted to someone who's nice to you, but you really don't actually feel that connection with.
Yeah, that's a really helpful point, that it's actually more letting go of connections that aren't helpful, like tuning to that, and then that actually helps you see other connections a little bit more, and then, but also not convincing yourself, I have to, if all the other elements there, then I have to just force the physical because I can't have everything, when actually we're still aiming to have all the five elements, and the physical is really just like what you feel. Stop intellectualizing it.
Yes. Yeah. And that can also mean, you know, what you might notice and like be attuned to is, oh, so there's this person who is really like consistent and showing up, and I don't feel anxious, and I don't feel they're not making me guess or wonder if they like me. I don't feel this really intense desire or like drive to like make something happen with them, because it's already happening. That's what it feels like. And what you then want to tune into is, do I like making out with them? Or do I want to, or do I want to move towards that? Or like, is something in my body saying yes to this person when I'm around them? And that's what you want to pay attention to. And then not making that like feeling, almost that egoic feeling of like, I need to make something happen or work. That's usually coming from someone who is not helping you make something happen or work. And it's like a thing to accomplish or prove something.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most helpful things, is your plant analogy, where it's, you know, you need a bit of like water for the plant and a bit of space, but like you can't force the plant to grow into a certain type of plant or at a certain rate.
Yes.
But, you know, that's with like different connections that, yeah, it's not something that you have to force to do. Like, it will happen naturally.
Yeah. And so really like just accepting what a plant turns out to be. But like, it's okay that it takes a little time and energy and effort to find out sometimes.
And also, big thing I try and do is remind people there's no such thing as a waste of time, because that's often a key thought that comes into people's heads and they want to rush a decision. And we really want to move away from that, that every experience you're learning, and it'll still help whichever, if it's not that connection, it's going to help a future connection, whatever you're building this one.
It really does. And it's not always like, even with that high passion but unavailable person, there are usually things that you learn in that connection that will be really valuable to another connection in the future, in terms of like your just ways that you connect with someone emotionally, that you may then, they'll have so much more room to flourish with the right person. I know one thing you had mentioned too that was really helpful for you was self-validation. What is that?
On the same train, I was just about to segue into that. Because I remember first, like when I was, you know, initially kind of going into dating and trying to get tools and advice, I think I had a bit of a mindset that there's some expert advice, something that I don't know that's out there. And, you know, even like, you know, starting work with you, I thought like, you're going to tell me some kind of rocket science that I've just been missing, and, you know, not really feeling like I had the wisdom or the knowledge within. And one of the biggest surprises was actually kind of through kind of my own work and working with other people, is realizing it's less about trying to guess what everyone else wants, but more like tuning more into your emotions and your needs. So for example, like I remember there was one time where someone had, we'd been messaging consistently, and then I noticed that they didn't reply to a message, and you know, it was about 2 days, and I would try and get like advice from 10 different people, and you know, one person would say, Nadine, you're spiraling, don't think about it, it's fine. And It was really helpful, actually. I felt, like you helped me guide to knowing, actually validating myself that I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable about this. This actually makes sense. I'm the most person who's the best attuned to this connection, and trusting that my emotions are sending me a signal. That's actually important. So instead of just dismissing and saying I'm too emotional or too needy, and kind of not speaking up, the biggest thing was actually validating myself that this emotion makes sense. Makes sense to feel uncomfortable, when you've had consistency in messaging and then there's a change in that, and that's worthwhile kind of speaking up about or clarifying with the person. And yeah, for that particular person, I actually did speak up and the connection was about to end. And it was like, really big validation of, oh, okay, my emotions do know something. They're trying to signal something. It's not that there's something wrong with me and I'm just like too hypersensitive.
Yeah. That's the challenge with going to 10 different people for advice, is everyone has a different experience and background and also a bias. For example, how much patience they have to work through something that day, right? It might just be easier to say like, oh, it's probably fine. That could also come from like, I just want you to feel better. Being uncomfortable with you being uncomfortable, or with the reality that maybe there is a real challenge and just wanting to kind of put a band-aid over it. There can be someone who's even more anxious than you, or hasn't worked through like past challenges that they've had. So there's so many things that can influence people, and like you said, you're the one who's most attuned to the connection. And it's so true that when you first validate, this emotion makes sense because I'm feeling this, because you'll almost always take the right action next, like the action that makes most sense for that situation. And I had something like that too, where recently I was feeling kind of insecure in my relationship. Like meaning I was feeling insecure and then getting insecure about the relationship. And then I kind of was going towards my partner for that security or like extra validation when it was already there, like nothing had really changed. And then I journaled and validated myself. I was like, okay, where is this coming from? Like, what's going on? And it makes sense. And coming from that, and then I realized that there was another area of my life where there was a lot of insecurity right now. And it was almost like that created the emotion of insecurity at like my foundation. And then it would just seep into other areas. It would seep into my friendships. It would seep into my relationship. It would seep into everything else and just kind of like grab things to like feed it in a way. And as soon as I realized that, I kind of realized what the next line of action was, where I was like, okay, I need to stop indulging this because it's obviously not about this situation at all. And then the next day I felt immediately much better in my relationship. I was like, I just have to deal with the source of this insecurity first, and then the other things that I'm trying to fix that have nothing to do with why I'm feeling that way will kind of dissolve on their own. So it's not always like, sorry, I was just going to say, it's not always like, oh, I feel insecure, I validate it, it's your fault, I need to talk to him. Like, like this is coming from him, he's definitely doing something. Sometimes the validation will help you see things more clearly and that it's actually not about the relationship.
Yes. Yeah. But sometimes actually, I think when we self-invalidate, so if you're constantly dismissing your emotions or like over-catastrophizing, that actually you can feel more like out of control with your emotions up and down and can feel more unsteady, and self-validation helps give you that anchor to come back. And it might actually be that just, sometimes validation itself is all you need. You don't actually need to solve any other problem. Yes.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, and helps kind of sometimes if our mind gets a bit, if like you're feeling really angry or something, it helps that over spiraling and actually just comes back down to like, what's the source of this?
Yeah. So I know another big topic for you was assertiveness and communication. What did that mean to you? Like, what does assertiveness look like in a relationship?
Yeah, so it's like a stepping stone after self-validation, I think, where kind of tuning into your emotions, knowing what your needs are, and then being able to know what your boundaries are, what you're comfortable with and not comfortable with. And I see like assertiveness as a bit like a package. I actually find this, yeah, one of the most helpful kind of like toolkits with the people I work with is there's dialectical behavior therapy, DBT. There's a whole module on, it's called interpersonal effectiveness, but there's skills on like how to set boundaries, how to maintain your self-respect. So like, no matter how the other person responds after you've had a conversation, like you walk away feeling like, yeah, I had my own back, I stuck to my values, I didn't kind of, you know, downplay things or over exaggerate, that you really walk away feeling proud of how you responded in that situation. Or like skills in being able to like ask for what you want or say no to something. So for example, a lot of people in connections, they might find that they're wanting to move to another stage, but they're too afraid that they're going to scare the person off, or that, you know, they have like a topic that they find quite vulnerable and they don't know how to bring it up with someone. So it can look really differently, but I really like these skills because they come with like little mini scripts that you can apply to any situation. And I find like when people are feeling nervous, it's hard to get the words, or they try in the moment and then it kind of, their mind blanks, or it's just hard to even bring it up in the first place. So I found that's one of like the most helpful tools to kind of work with people, is to give them like a bit of a skill set around that. And also then clarify in a situation, okay, what are you needing? You're focusing on your self-respect. Are you needing to get something from this interaction?
Do you have any examples of where you've applied that? Or like, maybe I'll start by sharing that. For a long time, I thought I was doing that and I wasn't, or I was doing like half of it. So for example, I'd bring something up in a relationship because I was anxious. But I'd bring it up like, I'm so sorry. Like, I know this is me and not you, and it's probably nothing. And blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. So it's like
over apologizing.
Yes. And and then being like satisfied too quickly with maybe a response that didn't actually like help the situation or change anything about the situation. And yeah, you're right. It really is like the foundation of that is self-validation, because it would be, that was coming from not being 100% sure that my feelings made sense in a situation. So I was very easily convinced like that they didn't, or that I wasn't seeing things correctly and that kind of thing. So that eventually for me grew to being very validated in my experience. Like if I'm anxious, something's going on, and like especially if we're like talking about them, it needs to be addressed. And the communication became much more clear. So how did that show up for you? Like, was that more in dating or in a relationship?
I'd say it came out in all types of relationships. I'm actually like, for example, initially in my early 20s with friends, or going on dates, I wasn't quite truthful in sharing like my true feelings about a situation. It could be really small, like if someone said like, are you happy to go Thai tonight? Maybe I would have had Thai the last three nights, but I'm like, yeah, I'm fine with that, you know, kind of that mindset of being more like, you know, it's going to work better if I'm just more easygoing or casual. And the cost of like, it might seem small, but the cost of not telling the truth in those situations meant I couldn't actually share my personality with people, you know, like sometimes it's nice to know like, oh, Nadine loves the beach, or Nadine loves, you know, Japanese. And trusting that it's okay if the person, if I suggested something and someone said, I don't feel like that, it's not a, you know, a really horrible experience for them. They have the right to say no. Or if, you know, for example, if I wanted to say no to spending time with someone because I just was tired or I just didn't feel like it, I felt like I had to have this really big, elaborate reason. and I couldn't just say, oh, I'm sorry, I just don't feel like it tonight, but let's hang out another time. And it's actually, yeah, the more and more I started to be truthful in that, it felt like a relief because I could just be me and bring my personality out. And I also found dates became more enjoyable because I also got to do a bit more of what I enjoy in them. It's not like I just steamroll now and choose everything. I still enjoy, you know, when someone else suggests things, but it actually means that, yeah, they get to share a bit of like my passions and what I enjoy.
One thing that came to mind was with your husband, before he was your husband, you had shared something like he wanted to go get burgers and you wanted to eat healthy, but then you ate the burgers anyways. Then you're like, darn it, I should, like, getting kind of like down on yourself for not practicing the assertiveness skills. And I was like, you know, it's also actually a really great quality to be an easygoing person. And I think it wasn't even necessarily like, oh, I really didn't want burgers. It was more like, I'm supposed to be practicing these skills.
Yes. I'd forgotten about that. I'm glad you reminded me of it.
Yeah. So how did you kind of find a balance between, like, you are an easygoing person, I think. What's the difference between being easygoing and being kind of a pushover or kind of not being authentic to yourself?
Yeah. Well, I actually did a whole episode on people pleasing healthy versus unhealthy. I think like a key difference is, yeah, because I think that's also a really helpful point, is to acknowledge it's okay if you actually generally enjoy doing what other people do. And like it, I think it's the intention behind it and how you feel behind it. So like if you're saying yes to pizza because generally you really don't mind, or, you know, you're, you know, that that friend's had a really tough day and you just want them to really enjoy their pizza that night versus I think if you're like afraid of like a really negative consequence if you say no to having that pizza, like, you know, you're going to ruin the friendship, or I think that's a key difference. It's like whether it's fear driven or whether it's actually, you know, what's your intention behind it.
And I mean, ruin the friendship, it sounds pretty drastic. However, I can definitely relate to that in dating and relationship situations, of feeling like, oh, this person's going to think I'm too difficult or high maintenance. Oh, you know what? I haven't told you this, but when my best friend and I were traveling, she once casually said that I was medium to high maintenance. And she did not mean it in any way that was like supposed to be offensive. She and then she left to go do something, and I was just like so mad or so upset until she came back, and then we like talked about things. I was like, so what did you mean I'm medium high maintenance? And then she's like, have you been thinking about this for the last 2 hours? I'm like, yep. And she was like, well, I think I'm high maintenance. Like, I just mean like, oh, like we like our specific foods, or like we have these, like we have both have dietary restrictions and like that kind of stuff. But yeah, I realized that was a huge trigger for me, because I really don't like being seen as high maintenance or too difficult or not go with the flow, or just not someone who's easy to hang around with, that kind of thing. So I definitely think that was a fear that would come up in close relationships for me as well.
Yeah. Helpful point to not judge either side, like not like if you're easygoing, then you're just a pushover, or if you kind of really know what you like or have some specifics that you're like so high maintenance and it's a really terrible thing, but actually, you know, there can be benefits to both as well. Like I think about some people I hang out with where they really know what they want, but it's actually, I really enjoy that too. Like I really know their personality. Like you don't have to play games or guess. I think there's, you know, like benefits to both sides of the spectrum.
So one thing I'm curious to ask you too is, so you do therapy and then you started the dating coaching. What would you say is the biggest difference between the two? Because I know a lot of therapy focuses on relationships and that comes up. And you literally do both. So you're the best person to ask about this.
Yeah. And I actually had to really think about this and clarify it for myself before I got into it as well. And I'd say like the key difference is like with coaching, it's very present day focused and skills focused and like on a specific kind of area. So like if I'm like doing dating coaching, it's really looking at, okay, like what's happening right now, like what's coming up for you right now, applying the skills. And if I'm doing therapy, it might be, I guess, a bit more of a zoom out approach, because there could be multiple things going on in someone's life, whether it's relationships, whether it's work, whether it's, you know, trauma or things coming up from their past. And so I would do more, I guess, of that kind of exploring the puzzle pieces of their past and, you know, how it connects. And maybe sometimes we'd be working on a few different areas at a time and not just really zoned into that one area.
And then you have a male client currently, right? Have you found any significant difference working with a male client versus female clients?
Surprisingly, no.
Right?
Yeah. Because I did wonder at first, you know, I did a lot of work with you, and yeah, you also helped me when I was like starting up my dating coaching business. I know like your specific niche as well is with women. And like I had wondered, do these skills translate to men? And yeah, I've actually been more surprised how there's so many similarities between like genders and the experiences they have. That's actually pretty shared and common, and the skills are pretty generalizable.
My boyfriend was just telling me about a friend he has who's single and kind of like a dating challenge that he had, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is, it's the same for everybody. Like, he's really looking for a committed relationship and women don't want that. It's like the story that we hear about men, right? So how are you currently working with people for coaching?
So when someone wants to do coaching with me, I'll do like an initial, you know, 10-15 minute call with them just to see, you know, what they want to work on, make sure that, you know, it's a right fit, that what I'm offering can help them. And then I'll also do a little bit of assessment. Look, is this more therapy or is this more coaching? And at the moment I'm doing one-on-one sessions with people. So usually start with like 3 months of weekly sessions, and then kind of see after then if someone feels like that's enough, or if they want to continue on, then we might space it out or do fortnightly or something like that.
Awesome.
And yeah, I was, you know, wanting to help share with the others, you know, your amazing work. If someone wants to work with you, like, how do you see people through coaching?
Yeah, so the first thing I would recommend is just checking out the podcast, Women's Dating and Confidence Podcast. That's usually the best way to kind of gauge my way of working with people and my tools and that kind of thing. And then on my website, ambergrubenman.com/coaching is all the information about my coaching program From Dating to Exclusive, which I run quarterly currently. And you can get on the waitlist and get a discount for the next opening. And currently the next opening is in January
2024. Amazing. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Amber. It's been a delight to speak with you. And